Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. North Star! Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We are also brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. If you want to watch us in said studio, we are streaming. There it is. The live stream is back. We apologize for how dark it looks in here on video. I don't know what's going on. There are lights in the studio. Someone says it looks like after hours at the keg.
We're going to add some candles in there.
The keg.
Incense. It'll be nice.
I'll use some steak. That'll be nice.
A twice-baked potato? I don't know why it looks so dark on the screen.
They're working the lights out still. It's a process.
Keg-sized Crown and Coke.
There we go.
We have to ease people into being able to see you.
The keg-sized Crown and Coke.
Yeah, that was the note from the top. We want people to see Halford and Bruff, but not clearly.
Yeah. No, that's fair, though. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
Let's go to the phone lines, joined as we are every week on this fine program by this fine guest, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Wish?
Wow, the number one newsmaking program in all of Canada. You just had Bill Daly on. Did he tell you anything interesting? Are there any other American teams moving to college campuses in the near future or anything like that?
We're not telling you. He tells Canada all the good stuff. He doesn't tell the Americans.
All right. He says, you guys are the bestest. We're going to give you seven more teams. And then, well, it doesn't ever work out that way.
I'll tell you what. I tell everybody else, Greg. If you want to know, you have to download the podcast. Apple, Google, although not Google. Apparently, we have issues on Google. But Spotify, we're on there as well. I did ask, actually, if him and Gary have been to Mullet Arena yet. And he said, no, they haven't.
So Mullet Arena, as you know, Mullet Arena was named after, I guess, a family that helped fund the men's hockey program at Arizona State.
Correct.
And I don't know if this is, something that you guys are aware of, but in opening night at Mullet Arena, of where I will be in attendance, they are, in fact, giving out branded mullets to the fans that they're going to wear on their heads during the game.
I figured that they would. Yeah. I know that this was just like it was convenience, just this ironic
well
thing that happened. Yeah, like, well, we happen to have the mullet family here. But, the reason I was asking Daly in particular was to get a projection of how long that they will actually be in this arena. He said 2 years, but probably three. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it's weird because the morbid / odd curiosity about it will keep me intrigued for a while. But I do wonder at what point playing, because I know it's not even 5,000 seats, really. It's going to be less than that. But I do wonder at what point this facility, which is small and doesn't have a lot of amenities, stops becoming that sort of odd curiosity and more of a pain in the butt, especially for the guys playing there.
Well, first of all, it's not going to be maybe three. It's going to be three. Their deal is for 3 years, unless they're going to somehow buy out the last year of that contract.
Yeah, I think he was leaving it. Sorry, I think he was leaving it open to the possibility, but he was kind of suggesting yes, 3 years.
It's gonna be at least three, I think, because that's the parameters of the contract. And there's an option for a fourth year if they need it. I think year one's going to be a blast. I mean, it's going to be super fun. The environment's going to be awesome. There's going to be a spirit to that place that we've not experienced for an NHL game. You know, it's kind of like, seeing a club show after you've only seen stadium concerts for a while, right? Like it kind of recalibrates your brain into, wow, this is a different experience and I really dig it. But like you said, it's the off-ice stuff that's the real problem. Like revenue, for example, even though the Coyotes swear that they're going to make more money in some ways at Mullet than they did in Glendale. Facilities, the ability to attract players to your team when you have these facilities, you know, things of that nature are going to really come home to roost, you know, after year one. But for this year, it's going to be fun. I still think that there's a version of the Coyotes in this multiverse of the NHL that exists that gets off to a good start. The atmosphere at Mullet is really fun, and they become kind of the NHL's pet team for a little bit. Hopefully not successful, because that's not what they want. They want Connor Bedard. But otherwise, I think this is going to go pretty well for them. And as far as people being into the environment, it's going to be so different that I think people are going to be attracted to it.
Can you handicap the odds of shovels going into the ground for the new arena in Tempe?
like if it's going to happen at all?
No. Yeah, I realize that it's progressing, right? And I think they might have a decision this fall, like for sure. But I think we've just been down the road so many times with different arena proposals that at the end of the day don't happen. That I'm just like, I know they've got this plan, but there's still, I think it should be noted that there's still no 100% certainty that the new big boy arena is going to get built.
There isn't. And, you know, the Coyotes have told me that they do have other alternatives they can continue to explore in the area if Tempe doesn't work out. I couldn't tell you what they are. I think it's just sort of, we're going to keep trying until we find a place to put an arena to keep this team in Arizona. But this bid, they're optimistic on. So I would say the odds are fairly good that they've got a deal here. They're pretty confident about it. I think they obviously are still working behind the scenes on the people that ultimately hold the vote here. I think they're very bullish on the idea of it being a giant entertainment complex with the, you know, arena and casino and things of that nature. So there's a lot kind of in play with this bid that they're enthusiastic about. And so I have to imagine, you know, entering in this deal with Arizona State and trying to put the team a little bit closer to where they ultimately want to play. It's all part of the push forward towards something that they, I believe, are pretty optimistic is going to happen.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Wish, earlier in the show, we joked that no one is dominating the advertisement beat like Greg Wyshynski. You covered the jersey part of it quite thoroughly. And now you've written about, okay, so the NHL is now using digitally enhanced dasherboards that will erase and replace advertising found on traditional rink boards. There's going to be virtual ads on broadcast. You wrote this, and then you said that it certainly sparked some debate. What was the debate about?
People hate it.
Okay. Why do they hate it?
So here's the thing. For those who didn't read the story, you go to the game, you look at the boards, the ads are on the boards. They exist in real life. You watch the same game on television, you won't see the same ads. You will see digitally replaced ads with whoever the advertisers are that have bought that virtual ad space broadcast.
Okay.
So
okay.
In some cases, it may look like traditional boards with multiple ads. In other situations, it's going to be one company buying out the entire rink during a 30-second interval. And then after 30 seconds, the ads change, even if it's during play. So it's a huge adjustment. I was not trying to be hyperbolic in saying it's going to change the way that we watch hockey, because our eyes are trained to watch a certain thing. Many of us have been watching a certain thing for, you know, over 30 years. And now it's going to be a little different. It's going to be, you know, ads changing during plays. It's going to look different than it has. And if you've seen the broadcasts where they've done this, the boards are a little too bright. They're a little too vivid. They don't look the same as the boards we're normally used to seeing. And so, you know, the league contends that we're all going to get used to it. And they've done studies that show that it's actually more pleasing on the eyes to have one advertiser around the rink than, you know, multiple logos at all times. And maybe that's the case, but it is going to be a huge adjustment, and it's here. I mean, it's going to be on every broadcast unless the teams haven't sold their inventory and then, you know, rely on the undigital feed with the normal boards. It's going to be on everything that you watch. So it's a major change for the NHL.
So it's virtually projecting the ads onto the boards. What about in the arena? What does it look like in the arena?
No, like I said, like in the arena, it's going to look the same. Like
okay.
The ads are still on the boards.
Okay.
It's just that on the broadcast, they're using technology. The shorthand for it is called erase and replace.
I see.
It's kind of like they put a you know, they take out all the ads that exist in real life, and then they place new advertising on it. So the interesting thing about this technology is that there could be some practical uses at some point. They used it during the World Cup of Hockey in 2016. During a goal, the boards would like light up with like fireworks and animations and stuff. And so there's that possibility. There's also the possibility of using the boards for in-game statistics and stuff like that. I think that's something that's come in down the line. But for now, it's basically twofold. One, it's a thing where if the Devils come visit the Canucks and I'm watching the game in New Jersey, I'm now going to see local advertising on the boards in Vancouver instead of seeing Canadian Tire and Pizza Pizza.
Right.
So it's a way for advertisers to get their stuff on the air for 82 games, basically. The other thing, and this is not going to shock anybody, but there's a gambling component to it.
No.
You know?
Really?
Yeah, shocking, right? So not every sports book can advertise in every locality, right? So if you are one that's legal in one place and not in another, you know, now you can get it, you know, your stuff on the right broadcast. In like the example I would always use is Europe, where if there's a feed of an NHL game in, say, Finland, instead of them seeing, you know, Caesars Casino ads, they're going to see whatever their local sports book is on the boards, right? So there's a component of that too in this, and it's here. I mean, it's an interesting innovation. I do think it's going to take some time for a lot of fans to get used to it, but I also think that for younger fans that are used to seeing more augmented reality broadcasts that grew up, for example, with the strike box in baseball, this is just, it's not going to be as massive a change as it is for a lot of us that have been watching hockey a certain way on television for a really long time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked by usually an older person, like if we're watching a football game, they'll be like, how did they get that yellow line on the field? And I'm like, the players don't see the first down line. Like, you just kind of have to hold their hands through it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a slow creep. I mean, you know, I think it's funny. I mean, the glow puck was way ahead of its time, right? I mean,
yeah.
like as far as that technology, because it did lead to the first down marker. It did lead to that technology where you can see who's in what car during a NASCAR race as they race around the track. And it, you know, the strike box in baseball and all this other stuff that's now here. I mean, it's only going to get further and further in that direction because you're dealing with a generation of kids that are now watching games through their phones, where if you take your phone to a game, you can point it at the ice and you can see real-time statistics and stuff like that as you're watching the game. I mean, that's just kind of where we are right now.
Really? I can do that with my phone? How do I do that? I don't see. I'm now one of those olds where I'm going to be like, they're pointing my phone at the ice and expecting things to happen. Wish, I want to talk about the goaltending rankings that you published on ESPN.com.
Hell yeah.
Why were you initially so disrespectful to Spencer Martin?
I still kind of am. I just find it to be weird that that sample size last year resonated so much with the people I spoke with, but it did. I mean, I did not, I had the Canucks maybe around 12th or 13th in my initial ranking. And that's with being admittedly a huge Thatcher Demko fan. But the more I talked to people around the league for this ranking that published this morning, which, you know, is not only statistics based and vibe based, but also talking to actually people that know what they're talking about, everybody said the Canucks are way low. Like, you got to move them up. They're clearly should be 6-5 somewhere in that neighborhood in this league right now. And so, you know, I ended up putting them, I think, fifth overall, right ahead of Washington, just based on how many people said, look, that tandem's going to be really, really good. And people see Martin as an upgrade over Halak. There is obviously a huge amount of respect for the way Demko plays. So, yes, more solid footing than I was thinking initially with the Canucks.
I think a lot of Canucks goalies get the benefit of the doubt now because of Ian Clark and I'm sure his name probably came up when you were talking to some of the experts.
Oh, sure. I mean, goalie coaches are, you know, a huge factor in a lot of this stuff as far as, like, when you do get a changeover, the idea that, you know, they're going to be in good hands. I think that's a huge factor in this. And also systems, too. I mean, I think, you know, people saw the results that Demko got last year under Boudreau, and they were pretty confident that he was going to be able to repeat those. I was surprised how many people were still super high on the Islanders for that reason. The Islanders, I think, rank out second overall in the ranking. You know, I think there's a certain amount of confidence that Varlamov is going to rebound from what was a really down year for him last year. But there was also confidence that Lane Lambert was going to be able to repeat the conditions of the Barry Trotz system, which I think remains to be seen. But there's still a lot of confidence in that duo, even though there's a coaching change there.
What is the best team with the worst goaltending tandem?
I would say it's got to be Vegas right now, which I think I thought would probably rank out like in the last three or four. They're 24th, which is a little bit higher than I expected. There's a lot of people that have faith in Logan Thompson as being a potential solution there. I think, though, when you compare how good they are up front, and again, like, I think they're a playoff team last year if they didn't face all those injuries at the end with Mark Stone being out, Riley Smith being out, and those guys not being in the lineup. They're just really good. And I still think they're going to end up being a playoff team despite this goaltending. And the goaltending may end up being a little bit better than people believe it will be.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Wish, I do want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins here for a moment. One, because you just wrote about them, which is another really good piece. Go check it out, ESPN.com. But two, we talk a lot about the Penguins in large part because they're so connected to the Canucks now, because like two-thirds of their former front office is now employed here. So you wrote about getting the band back together. And the lead is great because you actually talked to Sidney Crosby about this, and he confirmed, yeah, I was kind of freaking out that we weren't going to bring these guys back, specifically Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah, I mean, him and Letang are best friends. And so, you know, they spoke to each other throughout this process. And so Sid was privy to what was going on behind the scenes. And I mean, there were times when it did not look like the band would be back together, that either Malkin wouldn't be able to figure out a number that would keep him there, or, you know, if Letang was going to go and get a monster offer from someplace else because he still has a lot left to offer. But it turns out they were able to make it all work. And the interesting thing about that story, I went to Pittsburgh and reported on it, was the case that was made to management for keeping these guys together. And the case was, hey, look, you know, were it not for Tristan Jarry imploding against the Islanders 2 years ago, we win that series. Were it not for the crazy amount of injuries that we dealt with in that Rangers series, including losing Sid in that game that turned the series on that Jacob Trouba hit, we probably win that series. And then who knows what happens after that. So their case is, yeah, we haven't made it out of the first round in like 4 years. But if you look at the last 2 years, we're a couple of really bad breaks away from advancing and then maybe making another run at it. And so that sort of proof of concept was a huge argument for keeping those guys around, where other teams at that point probably jettison at least one of them. But they're all back and they believe that they, you know, if things break the right way, have another run left in them.
So what's the biggest hurdle to overcome for this team? Is it just don't be old and potentially get hurt?
No, because the injury part is obviously huge, because, I mean, you can't have Louis Domingue playing again in the playoffs.
Right? Fair enough.
I mean, it's impossible. He's part of the Rangers now, but you know what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, injuries are a huge part of it. But to me, the core of this team, the old core, are the ones that you know, push the ball downfield for this team in the playoffs. Like, Crosby was incredible last year before his injury. So I don't think they're concerned about that. I think they're concerned about the supporting cast. Like, it's almost a weird echo of the Ray Shiro years, where you have Sid and Malkin and Letang and all these guys, and then you're wondering what the bottom six looks like.
Right.
And you're wondering what the third pairing on defense looks like. They have a ton of people in camp to compete for those jobs. And I guess it's like the scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker breaks the pool cue. You know, we're going to figure out who survives. And maybe they'll figure it out, and maybe they'll find a good supporting cast. But I think that's the real issue right now, is you know what you've got on the top two lines. You know what you've got on the top two pairings. The Jeff Petrie acquisition I like for them a lot. Now we just have to kind of figure out who's going to do the grunt work, and that's been the real challenge for them in this camp, I think.
Do you think it's harder to put together a core or fill out the rest of the roster after you've got the core?
Well, I think it's hard to put together a core only because it requires the acquisition of elite players, and the only way to do that is through the draft, really. I mean, you can try to piece it together through free agency. But the fact that offer sheets are almost non-existent makes it even more difficult. So, you know, supporting cast is tough in its own way, because it's finding the right personalities. It's finding the right thing that you need in your lineup, be it a penalty killer or a guy who wins faceoffs. And it's also trying to do it all under the salary cap. But the acquisition of elite talent and creating that core of players has got to be the hardest thing, because it's a years-long process versus being something that you could do at a trade deadline or in an offseason.
But sometimes the answer is just be bad, right?
And
that's how you get it. You know, I think the challenge sometimes is you've got to fill out the rest of the roster, and I think everyone agrees that it's important. It could be the difference between just being a playoff team or winning a Stanley Cup. And it's like you don't have much money or cap space to do it with.
Right. Well, you know, when's the last time you thought about Anaheim? And when's the last time you thought about Detroit? It's probably 15 years ago, right? Well, guess what? You're going to think about them a lot in the next decade.
Right.
Right? Because they've been terrible, and now all of a sudden it's Zegras and McTavish and Drysdale, and now all of a sudden it's Cedar and Edvinson and all those young players that they have on Detroit. The NHL is cyclical, and you're right. Teams that go in the tank for a number of years are doing it the right way, unfortunately. It's just the way that the way you build a team is you have to do it through the draft in this league, and the teams that have, you know, smart front offices and sometimes run into a little bit of luck where the right guy is at the top of the draft, now all of a sudden you've got yourself something and you're cooking again.
Are the Red Wings going to get a contract done with Dylan Larkin?
Oh, I think so. I think I can't imagine a situation where he wouldn't remain there. I mean, they like him, and I think he likes playing there. And obviously, you know, he's going to be an important part of everything they're building. But, you know, Yzerman is a guy that certainly knows what he wants his cap to look like. So it's not going to be a situation where they're just going to give him anything, right? So, but I mean, I can't imagine that he wouldn't be a part of the thing that they're building there. And they're building something special, man. Like, I know the Ottawa hype train is speeding down the tracks right now. And in fact, the people I've spoken to at the camps I've visited have all mentioned their anticipation of what Ottawa might look like. Might not look like that great in the first month with Talbot being out. But I think Detroit has an equal chance of making a leap in that division this year. Like, I really like Detroit. I think their goaltending situation's gotten a lot better with Husso. Their young players being a year older is great. And the additions they made in the offseason, I think, really augment what's already there. And I also, you know, you have to kind of like read, it's a poker game, right? Like, you have to kind of like read the player a little bit. Like, I don't think Yzerman starts making these moves in free agency unless he thinks he's got something now, right? So I think that's part of it too.
Wish, this was great, bud. Thanks a lot for doing it. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this again next Tuesday.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That's Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Coming up, open segment on the Halbro Experience. If you want to weigh in on anything, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. You can start getting your What We Learns in as well. Hashtag it WWL. Tell us what you learned over the last 24 hours in sports. Haven't really touched on Monday Night Football yet. Every team in the NFC West is now 2-2. You got the chaos that you wanted.
But only one of them has an elite quarterback, and that is obviously the Seattle Seahawks.
I've been throwing that around to various buddies via text.
What, who's the best quarterback?
No, not even who's the best. I'm just so yesterday I was like, the 49ers defense is now taking care of the second best quarterback in the NFC West, Matthew Stafford, and the best quarterback in the NFC West, Geno Smith. And people were just nodding along. They're like, yep, he gets it. He gets sports. And I threw it to another buddy, and he's like, you can't say that. You're just basing it on numbers, to which I said, yep, I am basing it on numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback with the best numbers in the NFC West is the best quarterback right now in the NFC West.
How awesome would it be if Geno Smith started ending in every interview with either let's ride or go Hawks?
He should. He should.
Go Hawks.
He should be leaning in. He's probably too humble. Yeah. One thing that's come across is Geno's kind of a humble guy. And I think part of that is because he's been humbled throughout his NFL career. But he should 100% be leaning into this. Even if it's only four or five games, like what he's done so far, he deserves a ton of credit for the way that he's played. Anyway, we can get into all these conversations if you like in the next half hour. But right now, we got to go to break. We'll be back shortly. Don't go anywhere. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Time now for Sportsnet 650 traffic from the sea.
Cooper Kupp right. Stafford going to throw out right. Intercepted and coming back the other way.
Talanoa Hufanga. That is a name. All due respect to Lampkin Butts the other day. That was a pick six, and that was a game changer yesterday. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. 49ers with a big win against the defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams. Every team in the NFC West now at 2-2. The Jimmy G experience in San Francisco, I feel like when you have to rely on him to do stuff, the experience sucks. But when you have all the other pieces, all this other great collection of talent that the Niners have doing their thing, you're kind of like, ah, he's fine. He's handsome, and he manages the game.
What are you saying then? If he has to be good, then the 49ers are bad?
If he has to be good, you're screwed.
What if he just has to, like, stand on his 2 feet?
Just flip the ball towards Deebo Samuel, and you're like, go do your thing, bro. And then the defense just takes over. That defense nearly murdered Matt Stafford last night.
Yeah.
That was a very, very – that defense – sometimes you forget how good that they are, but also – with the defensive coordinator, D'Amico Ryans, how aggressive they are.
Yeah.
They blitz. And they actually don't blitz that much. They just get after the quarterback a lot. I should be clear. They don't call a lot of design blitz. They just have guys on their front four that can get after the quarterback.
The NFC West power rankings experience is hilarious. Because I would probably go 49ers, Rams, and then I think I'd probably still go Cardinals and then Seahawks fourth. Like I realize that the Cardinals haven't looked great, but I feel like they have a higher upside than the Seahawks do.
So the reason that I would put
them to find out soon because the Cardinals are in Seattle for week 6 after the Seahawks go to New Orleans in week 5.
And despite the fact that the Rams beat the 49ers en route to their Super Bowl last year, the 49ers have dominated that matchup. That's 7 straight victories that the Niners have against the Rams in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
It's bizarre, but it's a fascinating thing to watch play out because I kind of felt like the division would be a little bit more predictable. I kind of assumed that Seattle would be the worst, and they still very well may be by the end of the year. I didn't expect Arizona to look this fragmented.
And yet
disjointed.
They're still 2-2.
And they're 2-2. And to me right now, the Rams look like they are the furthest off the projection for me. I knew that they wouldn't be as good as the Super Bowl winning team because they lost key guys, including a guy like Von Miller.
Yeah.
And there's always the Super Bowl hangover, but Matt Stafford looks like he aged like 10 years in 1 year.
Well, he had a good offseason, right? A lot of partying.
Yeah.
Won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. And now you watch the beating that he took last night, and he's obviously, he had a lot of miles on the tires from those years in Detroit, right? Like he took a beating in there. But it's been an interesting division to watch play out. Okay, that's the NFL story real quick because we got a few things we want to get to here. Before we dive back into the Canucks, we're kind of doing a look ahead here. So you know that October is manna from heaven for sports fans. Everything kind of starts to happen, right? So I mentioned like when we did what happened this morning, we're into NHL preseason, we're into NBA preseason, NFL's well underway. So this weekend, baseball MLB playoffs start Friday.
I know. The
Jays are going to open.
Snuck up.
Yeah.
Well, they start right away.
The regular season's still on, as far as I can tell. I'm watching a Jays in 30 in studio right now. But the Jays open the playoffs on Friday at home. Here's the catch, though. They don't know who they're going to play.
Very likely going to be the Mariners.
Right. So the Mariners have 1.5 game lead over the Rays for that final wild card spot. Basically, the higher the 2 seeds play the Jays. So Laddie, I know you probably stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning every night pouring through spreadsheets and statistics. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to see the Jays take on in the playoffs? Do you want to see the Mariners or do you want to see the Rays?
I know every single pitcher, batter, head-to-head. No, I think they match up better with the Mariners. And it's tough. You know, it's 2 good teams, Mariners or the Rays. So it's pick your poison. But I think just based off how the Mariners are shaped. I think they have a few pitchers that like to give up the long ball. The Jays like to hit the long ball.
Yeah.
I think they match up a little bit better against the Mariners.
Who are your 3 starters for the Jays?
Well, it's Manoah, Stripling, and Gossman.
Oh.
Well, Kikuchi you bring in for the ninth, of course.
Right. They have that throwaway game where they pitch all their relief pitchers in the playoffs.
Where does
bullpen
he
start?
Brios is your end of the like long relief cleanup guy, I think, because you can't trust him in a playoff game with the year he's had. Is his career over? No, but I think at this point right now, you have 3 exceptional starters that you can go with. Why wouldn't you pick those 3?
So Friday now is this weekend we're going to have Friday MLB postseason underway, which is always great. We've got decision day in MLS on Sunday, and that suddenly has significance out of nowhere from the clouds. The Whitecaps are playing to get into the playoffs. We're going to have further NHL exhibition games as we get closer and closer to the start of the regular season. We've got a full NFL slate ahead on the weekend. It's Thanksgiving, so we're going to have big dinners and tryptophan and sleeping on Barca loungers. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for this. This is a lot. But as we kind of circle everything back to the Canucks, as we get closer and closer to the preseason, there's still a significant amount of things that this team has to do to, one, be ready to go, two, get the roster in place, and three, there's still that Horvat contract that's still kicking out there as well. The Canucks have stuff to do still, which includes playing out the remainder of these preseason games.
So Dranser, who we're going to talk to in just a few minutes, put up an article on The Athletic yesterday. He said he actually watched that Canucks Oilers game, so good for him for doing that, sticking through it. Three players who helped their chances last night and three who didn't. The first one is Andy's new favorite player, defenseman Christian Wolanin.
Gotta love him.
Craig Wolanin's son. Remember Craig Wolanin?
Yeah,
Christian Wolanin was actually born in Quebec City because his dad played for the Nordiques then, and then I think the very next season the Nordiques moved to Colorado and his dad won a Stanley Cup with the Avs.
I was not aware of that. You really did your Wolanin research.
I did some Wolanin research last night because I knew that Andy was very excited about Christian Wolanin.
Yeah.
I was
making almost the top six, baby.
Even actually Kuzmenko was texting me and said, Andy doesn't like me anymore.
He was very upset.
He was very upset. And
what's the meme? Because Mankin no longer best friend. Now Wolanin best friend.
Yeah. Wolanin was actually a fairly highly regarded young player when he was with the Ottawa Senators. And what I read was that when Mark Crawford was the coach in Ottawa, Crawford really liked him. When he wasn't the coach anymore, Wolanin didn't get as much playing time.
Was it Guy Boucher?
I think it was. Guy Boucher was in there somewhere.
Right.
And then he had an injury, and then he ended up getting traded to the Kings. And then the Kings put him on waivers, and the Sabres claimed him for one game.
Right.
And then tried to send him down to the AHL, and the Kings were like, So they reclaimed Christian Wolanin. Hasn't played many NHL games, really.
70.
Injuries, healthy scratches, down in the AHL for a bit. So I suppose it was a good value bet for the Canucks to pick this guy up because he was a guy who was highly regarded a few years ago. Maybe he just couldn't crack the lineup in LA with that defense. So we'll see. It'd be funny if they put him on waivers and then the Kings were like, oh, we get to claim him again.
Third time's a charm.
So Christian Wolanin looked good last night. Dranser also liked Nils Åman's game, especially for his penalty killing. And he also liked Jason Dickinson's game. And this is a very Dranser sentence.
Okay.
On Jason Dickinson, quote, he still did enough Monday to cement himself as a probable opening night player.
I feel like those are counterintuitive.
Can you cement yourself to be a probable anything?
You're a definitely maybe, friend. You're a definitely maybe.
That is where Jason Dickinson is, according to Dranser. Three guys who didn't help their chances. Will Lockwood. I think Lockwood is one of those players where you're like, I love your effort. I'm just not sure it's enough for the NHL. Maybe with some time, but you know, he's 24 years old, and a guy like, you know, a lot of comparisons have been made to Tyler Motte with Will Lockwood. And I remember when Tyler Motte was traded, it was like, oh, there's an opportunity for Will Lockwood to replace what Tyler Motte did. What, you know, use your speed, use your aggressiveness, get in on forechecks. But I think Will Lockwood needs to learn how to kill penalties. That's one thing that, you know, if I were him, I'd be really focusing on in the AHL because it's the details, but also you just wonder if he's got the overall game. Dranser didn't think Danny DeKeyser did anything to help himself, and I don't think Danny DeKeyser has shown anything really that he can be a big part of the Canucks.
I'm not seeing it. I see the opportunities. He's been granted quite a few, to be honest, and I'm just not seeing it. I feel bad in a way, because I know he had a really bad back injury in Detroit, and that kind of sabotaged his mobility and limited like what he was going to be able to do. But the narrative that was being sold was that he was a guy that had sort of redefined his game. And I remember his agent telling Wish for ESPN, Greg Wyshynski, that they were hoping he could kind of have like a Jack Johnson-esque renaissance in the later part of his career, where he just learns to be a steady stay-at-home defensive. I just don't think the mobility is there.
Drancer, no, I agree with you, and I don't think the Canucks can afford to be adding any more guys with mobility issues to the back end. Like, of course, Wallanen, I mean, one of the things that has kept him back is his mobility. I mean, he's not super slow. He's not one of those, like, you watch him, he's like, oh, there's a plodding defenseman. But I don't think he's a great skater either.
Yeah.
The third one that Drancer didn't think did much to help his case last night is a bit of a curious one, if only because Nils Höglander, who is the player, actually scored a power play goal Monday, but Drancer points out he was pretty quiet at even strength. And I think this is a good that Drancer pointed this out, that even with the Canucks icing a lineup that had Podkolzin and Garland and some NHL guys, Höglander only played third line ice time. And, you know, I just keep thinking that the Canucks went into this season with the idea that Höglander was going to start the season in Abbotsford and that something really dramatic would have to happen for him to make the team. Now, maybe those injuries to Besser and Mikheyev are dramatic enough, but the other guy that, you know, I think has looked good at times, and Drancer points this out too, is Linus Karlsson, right? I don't think he's looked super out of place. And, you know, maybe he's one of those guys that the coaching staff looks at and goes, you know, I don't have any allegiance to Nils Höglander. I don't have any allegiance to any of these young players. I like this guy more for whatever reason.
I think there's something to be said for guys getting a look in the early parts of the regular season that maybe you didn't expect because of injuries to Mikheyev and to Besser. But the forward group is too log-jammed. Like, I don't think that Karlsson has a sniff. I think he's probably shown well, and they're probably happy, but he's 100% destined to go to the American League. They have enough depth at forward, even with these injuries. I mean, again, you're talking about Höglander goes from on the outside looking in. That's a nice option to have in terms of being able to call up a forward. The blue line is going to be the really interesting one for me because I don't think that they are done nibbling around the edges. Now, nibbling around the edges, I mean the DeKeyser thing. When he was brought in, I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. Not that interesting, to the point where we had a guest on the same day that he got a PTO, but I digress.
Vancouver.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
It's a big get.
It was a big get, yeah. I think the interesting thing here will be what teams have surplus of defensemen that they're probably going to have to waive or part with a guy. Because Vancouver is one of those teams, they're so shallow on the blue line that they can take a flyer on a guy and it becomes intriguing. I mean, we just had like 10 minutes of Christian Wolanin discussion. That gives you an idea of where the blue line is.
Not enough for my mind.
Right?
We got to keep going.
Andy wants more. Yeah. Is what we learned. Is
that's
just
what
I'm
like,
here for. I really like Wolanin. That's it.
Andy, I love having you on the show because like you're like having like a little kid. That's part of the show. And like, you're like, my favorite player is Wolanin now. And like, and it will change. Every
week,
day.
Week,
Andy, where are you? He saw something shiny. He's left the studio.
And you just fall in love with players. It's great. Like, it reminds us, Alfred and I, of why we love sports.
True.
Tomorrow I come back. I hate Wolanin now.
Yeah.
I don't like him anymore.
Yeah. Don't like him.
My new favorite player is Travis Dermott. No, I think Dermott adds to this, though, because there's some real uncertainty there about when he's going to be back or what the ailment is. And if here's the thing. They can afford Knox in the forward group because they've got the depth. They really can't afford it on the blue line because they just don't have it. And I think when you're talking about a strong start to the season and wanting to get off to a good start, you're looking at the blue line as currently comprised and saying, okay, we're tiptoeing into a regular season where Dermott might not be healthy. We're not really sure what our top six looks like. We're projecting that Pullman can be a top four guy, but maybe he can't. The de facto answer is always going to be, well, yeah, Demko can bail us out. Or yeah, Demko will give us some starts and we'll be all right. That's a dangerous game to play. So I do wonder if they might add a guy for depth purposes, either via waivers or via trade as we get closer to the start of the regular season.
If you listen to guys like Sat, who is more plugged in than us, because we're not plugged in at all, you'd only have to be plugged in like just a tiny bit.
They ought to go out of their way not to tell us things.
Just a tiny bit. Yeah, like these guys will just make fun of
it. They give us just disinformation every day.
But Sat expects something to happen. Well, like if you were to bet, like, it's either going to be, and this could be maybe related, right? Like, maybe there's a deal where the Canucks send out, say, Ferland and a sweetener and get back a defenseman somehow.
So what you're saying is they're trading Horvat for a top 4D. Is that what I'm hearing?
Please don't do that.
Go with that. Clip that. Okay. That's what Sat said.
Sat online 3.
It just feels like there might be another move coming. I don't know what they're basing that on. Just like their horoscope, or would the Canucks have a horoscope?
Well, Frank Saravalli yesterday, he's got a new thing up called Icebreakers on Daily Faceoff. We're going to talk to Frank later this week, and he was talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, for example. So they have a surplus of defensemen, and they realize that with waivers, they're not going to be able to keep all of them on the active roster.
Yeah, this happens every year.
Right. And the guy that keeps getting mentioned there is Pierre-Olivier Joseph, P.O. Mm-hmm. Joseph.
Yeah, maybe the Canucks can get another Derek Pouliot in the door.
Well, that's the thing. The Canucks do have a history of taking other people's either failed prospect or guys that just got squeezed out and putting them in the lineup.
You know what I was thinking, actually, yesterday? We should have, like, an award. Maybe we can call it the Yannick Weber Award for defensemen that desperate Canucks fans get excited about.
Sure.
Derek Pouliot would have definitely won that award. Mm-hmm. Remember when he came over from Pittsburgh? He actually played pretty well for a bit.
Yep.
And then he didn't. And then he really didn't. Yeah. And then, you know, the joke was, why is Pouliot playing top 4 minutes?
Top
and you're
four
like, because he's their fourth best defenseman still.
No, and that's what I'm talking about, really.
This happens. It's happening with Christian Wallanen, right? Like, the bar is pretty low. And the need is pretty desperate that any guy that looks like he can kind of play a little bit, mm-hmm. You're like, maybe that's the answer. Like, I'm desperate. Like, at one point, Ottawa was pretty excited about this guy,
well,
and then he had injuries. You know, maybe he's just a late bloomer. Maybe those injuries set him back.
I'm glad you framed it this way, because here's the thing. I'm going to sound like a total douche saying this, but when you talk about Christian Wallanen, when you talk about Christian Wallanen, you're not really talking about Christian Wallanen. You know? You're not. You're talking about the current plight of the Canucks' blue line, the fact that he isn't even a talking point, and this didn't originate with us. We came in here this morning, we're like, all right, we're going to have to do this. But the conversation about him is really a conversation about the current state of the defense and what they might need to do, because this is a diamond in the rough situation. Like, when we talk about building it out, we talked with Wyshynski about building a core and how do you get elite players. Oftentimes, when all the other options and routes have been removed, you go mining for diamonds in the rough. And that's what you do. And that was the mindset with Benning with a lot of the pickups. And his MO was go find high guys with previous high draft pedigree or guys that we liked in their draft year that maybe just haven't panned out somewhere else.
I'm looking at the list of defensemen that the Canucks have had in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Ah, some of the names really brings me back. Oscar Fantenberg.
Fanty.
Philip Larson. Andre Pedan, remember him? He was big, tough. Maybe he's going to be Chara.
That was another one.
Could be. You never know.
But that's what
Jalen Chatfield has a little Chris Tanev in him.
He didn't.
He didn't.
What was the name of the tall Russian defenseman again?
Was Philip Larson the one that got...
There we go. Tramp. Yeah,
how could you forget him?
Was Philip Larson the one that got just demolished behind the net?
Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
Is he okay? Like, I didn't. Did we get an update after that?
I think he played again.
I don't know.
Did he play for the Canucks again?
I don't know. Google it up.
Yeah, that little box in front of you with the screen.
I've got it right now. But
hey guys, remember Brogan Rafferty?
Mature prospect Brogan Rafferty.
Mature prospect Brogan Rafferty.
That was the best thing I ever came up with. I wanted to classify Brogan Rafferty because he was 25 at the time, but he was just coming out of college. So then we referred to him as a mature prospect, which also doubled as a dating site online for senior citizens.
Do not Google that.
We're getting all kinds of mature prospects here. I do remember all these guys. And what do they all have in common? They were shots in the dark. They were mining for diamonds. And here's the reality of it is, you know, when you take that many shots at trying to find a diamond in the rough, 99 times out of 100, it's not going to work.
Guys, I think Ashton Sautner might have something here.
Is he still with the organization?
You know what? I don't know. But I know...
Because him and Brisebois had the sort of like lifetime AHL pass, right?
I loved Wyatt's tweet last night He's like, I feel like I've been watching Breezeball in the preseason for 10 years.
It's true, though, right? Like, it feels so long.
Yeah, I know. He's going to go in the
There's
Ring of Honor.
Preseason stalwart Guillaume Breezeball.
He's at least 40 now.
It's amazing, though. Like, you to hang around that long with one organization is rare, right? I mean, I've seen journeymen before.
He's not actually on the roster anymore. He just keeps showing up. They're like, oh, whatever. We'll just give him a
He's still got his stall. Yeah. He's a journeyman that hasn't journeyed anywhere. He's just stayed in one place the entire time.
Evan McEnany. Remember him?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Well, there was a story about him. I don't remember what it was.
I think he played pretty well in the AHL. Yeah. I don't know. Who cares? We'll talk to Drancer coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.